Introduction. In the late summer of 1996, Simon Kellner, who was both an old friend and an exceptionally nice fellow, rang me up in New Hampshire and asked me if I would write a weekly column about America for the Mail on Sunday's Night and Day magazine, to which he had recently been appointed editor. At various times over the years, Simon had persuaded me to do all kinds of work that I didn't have time to do. But this was way out of the question. "No," I said, "I can't. I'm sorry, it's just not possible." "So, you can start next week?" "Simon, you don't seem to understand. I can't do it. We thought we'd call it Notes from a Big Country." "Simon, you'll have to call it Blank Space at the start of the magazine, because I cannot do it." "Great," he said, but a trifle absently. I had the impression that he was doing something else at the time. Reviewing models for a swimsuit issue would be my guess. In any case, he kept covering up the phone and issuing important editor-type instructions to other people in the vicinity. "So, we'll send you a contract," he went on when he came back to me. "No, Simon, don't do that. I can't write a weekly column for you. It's as simple as that. Are you taking this in? Simon, tell me you are taking this in." "Wonderful, I'm so pleased. Well, must run." "Simon, please, listen to me. I can't do a weekly column. Just not possible. Simon, are you listening? Simon? Hello? Simon, are you there? Hello?" Bugger. So here are 78 columns from the first 18 months of Notes from a Big Country. And the thing is, I really didn't have time for this. Coming Home. I once joked in a book that there are three things you can't do in life. You can't beat the phone company, you can't make a waiter see you until he's ready to see you, and you can't go home again. For the last 17 months, I have been quietly, even gamely, reassessing point number three. A year ago last May, after nearly two decades in England, I moved back to the States with my wife and children. Returning home after such an absence is a surprisingly unsettling business, a little like waking from a long coma. You quickly discover that time has wrought changes that leave you feeling mildly foolish and out of touch. You proffer hopelessly inadequate sums when making small purchases. You puzzle over vending machines and payphones, and are quite astounded to discover, by means of a stern grip on your elbow, that gas station road maps are no longer free. In my case, the problem was intensified by the fact that I had left as a youth and was returning in middle age. All those things one does as an adult, take out mortgages, have children, accumulate pension plans, develop an interest in household wiring, I had only ever done in England. Things like furnaces and screened windows were, in an American context, the preserve of my father. So, finding myself suddenly in charge of an old New England house, with its mysterious pipes and thermostats, its temperamental garbage disposal, and life-threatening automatic garage door, was both unnerving and rather exhilarating. Moving home after many years away is like that in most respects, an odd blend of the comfortingly familiar and oddly unknown. It is disconcerting to find yourself so simultaneously in your element and out of it. I can enumerate all manner of minutiae that mark me out as an American. Which of the 50 states has a unicameral legislature? What a squeeze play is in baseball? Who played Captain Kangaroo on TV? I even know about two-thirds of the words to the Star-Spangled Banner, which is more than some people who have sung it publicly. But send me to the hardware store, and even now I am totally lost. For months, I had conversations with a sales clerk at our local True Value that went something like this. "Hi, I need some of that stuff you fill holes in walls with. My wife's people call it polyfiller." "Oh, you mean spackle?" "Very possibly. And I need some of those little plastic things that you use to hold screws in the wall when you put shelves up. I know them as raw plugs." "Well, we call them anchors." "I shall make a mental note of it." Really, I could hardly have felt more foreign if I had stood there dressed in lederhosen. All this was a shock to me. Although I was always very happy in Britain, I never stopped thinking of America as home, in the fundamental